So, last time we noted there's all these contradictions as to when a Bechor inherits, whether Bechor inherits moment one, his moment of death, moment two, which is the moment at which he declares he wants his property, by protests, and moment three, which is at the division of property, and whether the assumption is that he, because it's called Matana and has a unique nature, if you hold it has a unique nature, whether that should push him earlier or later than the Yorshim. And we know that there were contradictions between Kof Chav Dalet, Kof Chav Hei, Kof Chav Vav. And what we'd seen was the Ramah. And so far what we'd seen was the Ad Ramah. That the Ramah's solution essentially was the difference between inheriting the right to the property and inheriting the property itself. He gets, right, you remember this? I know it's been a few days, but the Ramah's solution was you inherit the rights to the property. The Bechor inherits the rights to the property at death, but not the actual ownership. Why does that matter? Because the sugya on Tilchav Daled is talking about whether or not the Bechor gets Sheva, right? That depends on actual ownership. Right? That depends on actual ownership. Because if you don't own the property, someone's turning on the air, it's really hot in here. Right? It's cooler outside because you can open the window, but like the wall or whatever, but one or the other. I don't know. But it's really hot. One way or the other, it's really hot in this room. So the sugya in Tilchav Daled is talking about whether or not you get double in the shevach, and that which was produced after death, that depends on actual ownership, right? Actually, ownership of property, and that doesn't happen until later, right? Until he gets the property. Yeah. But the sugya, right, because that's talking about Shevach. But the sugya in Kavchav Hei and Vav, which is talking about whether someone can waive his rights. So the Ramah says you can waive a right, meaning he inherits the right to get double already from the moment of death, right, the death of the parent, and therefore, since he already has the rights, you can talk about waiving rights. But the question of Shevach isn't about rights, it's about ownership in real property, and that doesn't happen until later. Right? So that's basically his solution to this Gemara. Now, there are problems with this. One is that the Gemara calls the Bechor giving up his rights Vitur. And normally, and this is a very technical linguistic point, so let me just make it now. Normally, when someone has a right and they waive their rights, the word used by the Gemara is mochel, right? Mochel means to waive rights. Vitur is to give up on something, which sounds like giving up something you have. And therefore, you would need an act of kinyan or something like that. So that language is a little bit weird, because if you think that what we're talking about here is rights and not actual ownership, the word should have been mechila and not vitur. So that is a technical problem. I'll bracket it, okay? It is a problem. The other problem is that while this explains kochav dal and kochav vav, it doesn't actually explain the first sugya and kochav hei. Right? Like the bottom kochav hei, beginning, like the first sugya, there were two sugyas we did, kochav hei, kochav vav. One was whether you can give up on your rights and the property, remember that, or puppy. But the other one was the Micha case, right, is why is it that if you're Mocha and the Bechor says, give me double, right now, that from that moment he starts inheriting double. Right? If all he has is rights and not ownership, then why does being Mocha change anything? Right? Meaning, again, the fact that the moment he says, I would like you to give me my property, right now, at that point the Gemara says he does start inheriting double, even of that which is produced after that, implies an ownership that inheres in land, rather than the mere rights to that land. Right? I mean, because otherwise, if he just has a right, still, right? Yes, he's demanded his right, so, but that seems to be a little bit odd because we actually give him double. So, therefore, there are...
I mean, he has potential for...
Right, he has potential, but just...
What if he protests that potential is real?
Right, so that makes sense if you fit, right? But that's hard to say. Like, why should protesting, right, give actualized rights? Right, that's a little bit weird. Right? Meaning, in the end of the day, if you actually think the moment in which you actually get rights in the land is only once it's divided, so why should protesting be considered dividing? That's the weird formulation. That's why the Rama, as neat as he is, right, is there are certain problems with it. So let's try another approach. Now, I understand that some of you had trouble with the Ran. I understand you had trouble with the Ran, partially because the Ran is complicated, partially because our printer hates us very much. And, you know, it's the small things in life, you know. Yes, there is basically a war going on. Yesterday is theoretically a day of rage. Yeah, I'm a little bit worried to drive home. Yes, the Fatah declared a day of rage, which we don't know what that will mean yet, right? Yes, that makes me nervous when I'm driving on the road. But for the moment, let's deal with the frustration of the Ran, which, in the grand scheme of things, the fact that the Ran is confusing and that our printer hates us should be the most of our problems. It is the least of our problems. It should be the most. Halavai, we should return to days where the complicated Ron and a bad printer are the worst of our problems. Amen. Ten Yerusalem.
Better than last year, or even the printer at all? Or the printer?
It was better last year. Oh, fine. We also didn't have war. I mean, look, everything. Wait, you know.
I mean, we still have.
Yes, pandemic. Pandemic's not over. It's mostly over here. For the first time in like a month, we had cases in Efrat. We haven't had like any. And finally, there was like one family. They got it and then spread to the class. And now they're... And that's even though Efrat is like really, right, very vaccinated. But again, you can't vaccinate anyone under 16 yet. So like, when that's 30% of the population, only so much you can do. Yeah. Maybe more. In general, in Israel, that's true, but in Israel, in Ephrata, it might be more. That's probably more, actually.
I feel like it's sense for Israel to follow America and allow vaccination to 12-year-olds there.
We are going to. As soon as the FDA officially clears it, we're doing that.
I mean, they basically have already, you know?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure
my kids are younger than that. Even if you did that, there's many kids under that age. There's still several thousand.
Enough, it makes it better.
Yes. Okay. Fine. Right, so again, the Ran is dealing with the same problem, which is why is it that in these different sugyot you have different implications as to whether there is a unique nature to Yehusha Bechor, and if there is, does that make it that he inherits earlier than everybody else, right, which is what it implies in Kochavav, right? In Kochavav, it implies that even though everybody else only inherits when they divide the land Bechor, because it's Matana Kari Yachman inherits already from the moment of death, and raised earlier, but in Koch Hadal it implies the opposite, which is when it comes to Sheva, when it comes to whether or not you, part of your inheritance is that which is produced after the death of the father, the Gemara says, well, on the Bechor, because Matan Kari Yachmana, it does not, and Yerusha, it does, because Yerusha is earlier from the moment of death, right? Which is the exact opposite of what we had in Ankochavah, right? So again, the Rama distinguishes between rights and actual ownership. The Ran is going to try a different approach. So let's read it carefully. So he says, Perish. The Avagav de Kaimelon Kirabanan de Ina Bachor Notel, the Shevach Shevchu Nechasim Lachar Mita, Bein Shivchacha de Mele Kechafor Veveshvila, Bein Shevchu Shivichu Yitomim. He says, okay, he starts by attacking moment two, which is, how can you say that the moment a Bechor says, I want the land right now, I want my inheritance right now, he starts inheriting double? Didn't we already say that this was the Machlokes of Yehuda and the Rabbanan on Chof Chof Dalid? The Rabbi Yehuda says Bechor is like any other Yerusha, and therefore he gets double in Shevach. And the Chacham said, no, it's a Matana, and therefore he only gets it later. So if it's later at the time of division, then what does the fact that he wants to assert his rights help? It shouldn't help until he gets the property itself, right? Simply asserting that he would like to get the property, why is that enough for him to start inheriting double in the produce? Right? That's the Ron's problem, yes? We understand this problem again. Again, Gemara on Kuf Dalet says that if Rabbi Yehuda holds Yerusha's Bechor is like anyone else's Yerusha, and therefore he gets double even on things that were produced after death, because his rights begin to inhere on the property starting at the moment of death of the father, and therefore, since he owns this tree, so if it produces oranges, the oranges are part of an inheritance because his rights were already in the tree.
Yes.
Right? The Chachamim say no, matana kariyach mana, it's a gift, it's not like it's normal inheritance, and therefore, he doesn't get it until it actually enters his hand, he has no rights, and therefore the fact that it's produced from death until the division of land doesn't help him. So he gets double of what it was worth at the moment of death, not, but then anything that's produced afterwards, he inherits like a normal heir. Right? The Gemara on Kofak Hay, however, had said that that's only if he doesn't say, I want the property now. The second he says, I want the property, he starts getting double. But why? If you say that he doesn't own it until he gets it, what is simply saying, I would like the property now, why does that give him double rights? Right? On Kuf Chav Dalet, it implies he only gets double rights when it enters his hand.
Yes.
On Kuf Chav Hey Vav, it implies in the first sugya that he starts inheriting double from the moment that he says, I would like to inherit now, even before he actually gets it. Hey Vav, right? And then the second sugya, he hasn't even gotten to the second sugya on Kuf Chav Vav, which implies that Matana actually gives him rights from death, and that's why he can start waiving his rights, starting with the death of the father, while every other Yorish cannot. Right? But he's not dealing with that question yet. So far, he's dealing with a contradiction that in Kuf Chav Dalet, it says that the Bechor doesn't get double until he actually receives the property. And in Kuf Chav Hey Vav, it says, when he protests, why? Right? So far, that's what he's dealing with. So what's his answer? Afilu achi in michav amar rotani b'chelet b'chorati v'ini rote shemashi shibchu nichasim yehi shalochem. Micha. U'mahani le'mechato v'noto b'im shibchon meila. Bein, why are there answers? Bein v'shevach shishbichu yitamim. Nevertheless, he protests and he says, I want my b'chor now. It helps, and he starts getting double. Da kaimelan yesh bechor kodem chalukah, which because we hold that a bechor has rights before division. So which is it? Is it like it says in Kuf Chav Dalet that he does not have rights until it's actually been divided and given to him, or like it implies in Kuf Chav Hey Vav that he has rights before it's divided? Right, that's a pretty glaring contradiction. Which is it? Right. Telkach mechaven shirotel liskot bechorato zocheba. So how does he answer? The near elite, shezehu ikaro shel davar, shechelek b'chora ma'atana kari rachmana. So point one, the b'chor is the part of that he gets as a b'chor is called a matana, it's called a gift, an inheritance. Va'anotein matana, u'mizakeh lo yidei acher, ein mikabel matana zoche b'matanato, ad shishma v'yitratzeba. Says a gift, no one can force a gift on you, right? No one can force a gift on you. If you say, please stop shoving that in my hand, I know you think it's a present, but it's not, I would not like it, please take it away. I know you think that it's nice to give me a puppy, but I hate dogs, please take that away from me. It is not my problem that you want to give me a dog, right? I can say no, right? I can say you cannot force ownership of this on me. She'ilu kishishamat tavach lo zakha, because if, when the person said, hey, I put this dog in your house so that you now own it, right? Now you have to deal with it. If I say, absolutely not, right, then the ownership doesn't work. And now it is still your dog rampaging my house, and you are responsible for damages because it's your dog, not mine, right? If I have a dog, and the dog damages my property, that's my problem. If you gifted me a dog and I said, I don't want the gift, right? If I protest the moment I hear about it, the fact that you put it in my house and claimed it is no longer yours, but it is mine, it is still your problem, not mine. Okay? We're clear so far?
Yeah.
Right, as it becomes clear later in the sugya. Therefore, the bechor doesn't get it until he says, I want it. And if he said, I don't want it, he loses rights. And therefore, if he said, I don't want it, he loses rights. Okay, so what does the Ran say? The Ran, so far, says this, the following, make the following claim. He says, Matana Kari Rahmana means, not like the Yad Ramada, there's simply a distinction between right and actually getting the property. He says, at the death of the parent, what does the Bechor inherit? Because of the unique nature from Matana.
Being a parent.
Right, what is the nature of that? Does he have rights to it? Does he actually inherit the property?
He inherits the potential to own the property.
Very good. Right? It's neither just rights, nor is it property. What is it?
Potential.
It's as if he was given the gift. But just like any gift, Yaakov decides to give me a gift. He puts it in my house. He puts the puppy in my house. Right? So if I say, you know, I always wanted a dog. I don't want a dog, in case you're wondering. Right? But in case I said, I always wanted a dog, then at what moment did I begin owning the dog? No. If I say, oh, thank you so much, then at what point did I come to own the dog? No. From when it was in my house. Meaning, at some level, I do have an actual hold in this dog from the moment it's put in my property. Except because it's a gift, and a gift needs to be a gift, meaning it needs to be something I want, my full rights to it are held in abeyance until I acknowledge receipt of the gift and say, yes, yes, indeed I wanted it. Right? Meaning, from the moment that Yaakov puts the dog in my house until the moment I say yes or no, it's not merely a right, nor is it full ownership. It is potential ownership with an exit clause, right? With an exit clause which can retroactively make it that it was never mine. Right? But that's what he's saying, right? It's neither just a right, but it's not full ownership because it was held in abeyance. Right, because I have the right to say it's a gift, I don't want it. Yes? So therefore the Ran says, the third sugya, I know this is confusing, the third sugya on Kof Chavav, I mean, the second sugya on Kof Chavav, the third sugya that we've seen total, where the question is, can I say I don't want it? At what point is it enough mine that I can decide to vacate my rights to it? Death. Right? The death of the father. Right? Because it's mine to a certain extent, and therefore I can be mivater. I can actually give it away. But why do I not need an actual kinyan? Right? It's not mechila. It's not just waiving rights, because it's not a right. It's ownership and potential. And therefore, I can give up my rights. It's not mere waving, but it's not a kinyan either, because what I'm really doing is saying, Yaakov, get this dog out of my house. Right? So, therefore, at what moment do I own it enough to basically say, I protest keep it away from me, this is not a gift?
Immediately.
But because I could always back out of it, I have not fully taken hold of the property until I say, I want it, right? And therefore, if at no point do I actually weigh in and say I want it, then at what point do I inherit it? Division of land, which is the Sogyan Kokov Dalit. But if it actually gets to the point where I'm asked, is this a gift or not, since the kinyan already exists, this was ownership in potential, then at what point does my ownership in potential become manifest, either when you divide it, or if there's actually a moment at which I'm asked, do you want it, or I say, give it to me now, then I've instantiated my right. So therefore, what you learn from Kukhav Dalit is that if never am I asked whether I want to instantiate my rights, then the full ownership, which is necessary to start inheriting double, is only when it's given to me. But if it actually gets to the point where I say I would like my rights to it, then I've instantiated the gift, which began already at the time of death, and therefore I get double from that moment. But what's relevant in the third sugya, which is when can I waive my property rights, the critical moment is death, right? Death of the father. Okay?
I think the way I understood the Ran was until you say, I want it, then the produce still is, then you don't get the double.
You don't get the double, correct.
Meaning you don't get double retroactively.
You don't get it. Because it was held in abeyance, right? He seems to think that it's not just that it's held in abeyance and retroactively, once I say I want it, I got it from the first moment. Right? He says the fact it's a quasi-ownership and full ownership, right? I mean, the fact that I can still get out of it shows it's not fully mine.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Yes. Okay? Right, okay? Let's try that one more time, right? Meaning, he seems to think the fact that I can back out means that I do have a certain level of ownership, but not full ownership. And in order to get double, I need full ownership. But I can accomplish that simply by saying, I would like to inherit now. Right? Okay. That's the first formulation of the Ram. You skip down a few lines after he gets to Matana, but then he says, So the Ran says, aha, let's go back to what the Rabbanan said. They said, it's a matana, and you don't inherit them, and you don't own a matana until it actually comes to your hand. So what does that mean? Because he's already come up with a weird formulation. So he says, Ufi jiktu kalashon yired har gamar. This is what it means. Ma matana lo zochi ba mikabel matana atam dematyal yadeh. Just like someone who gets a gift, doesn't own it until it gets to his hands. Kolomar. Olat yirzeh lizkot ba, or until the moment in which he acknowledges that he wants it, al chelek bechora ken. Ulefichach shevach shechlizu nechazim beindayim arei ushel yorshin. Shegena dimenotenu mikabel matana. The same thing would be true of Yaakov, that until, right, I actually say I want it, right? I didn't know he put it there. Any damage that happens, it's still Yaakov's dog that he just put in my property. She'im, okay. So that is the Ran's, right, that at least is part of the Ran's model, right? Meaning it's potential, right? It's not right, it's potential ownership, right? That's basically what the Ran thinks this is, right? Right? It's potential ownership. And according to him, therefore, potential ownership is enough Right? He gets potential ownership at the moment of death, and that's all you need to waive rights. If he never actually says anything, so then he fully actualizes his rights, which allow him to get double only when it's divided. But if it actually gets to the point where he's asked his opinion, right, so then he starts inheriting at that moment, because that's enough to assert his rights. Okay? Yes?
Yes.
We're clear? Is the Ron? Good. Okay, I know it's a bit confusing, but right, there's a certain similarity between this. Now, this obviously solves some of the problems that we had with the Yad Ramah, which is, on the one hand, this is Viter and not Mochel, right? Meaning it's not mere rights that he owns, right? Therefore, it's not Mochel, it's Viter. He's actually giving up something that he owns. But on the other hand, why doesn't he have to perform a formal kinyan to give up his rights in the property? Because
it's not
full ownership, right? Meaning it's somewhere between. It's Viter without a need for a kinyan, because it's neither just rights, nor is it full ownership. It's potential ownership or quasi-ownership, and that's in, right? And therefore, it is a giving up of something actual, but not giving up something that's fully yours, which would require a kinyan to vacate your ownership. Okay? Now, we will see, I guess tomorrow, because I didn't give it to you yet, Rashbam Tosfos, a little bit more complicated here, but they do get into the corporate entity, and this is sort of, because we're limited on Shirim, if I can just sort of get on paper this issue of corporate entity and show you one piece of evidence for it, this is where the Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman proves that there are shita that hold it between Machloket Rashi, Rashbam Tosfos here, so I'll probably do that tomorrow for Rami. And then we'll move to the question of leaving Israel in times of war, which doesn't, like I said, doesn't seem to be going away, so the study of still is relevant. I wrote that sheer in 2014, last time this was relevant, okay? Because it's not like it was my own catharsis, because, yeah, whatever. Anyways, yalla. One second. But we'll see. Now, there are Rishonim who really, really take Matana Kari Rachmana very literally, which is, no, Matana Kari Rachmana means the Bechor owns it a certain standard from the moment of death. And therefore, they're going to have to reinterpret, you know, Kof Kof Dalet. I will say that there is a very technical way to deal with the sugya on Kof Kof, the first sugya on Kof Kof Hey, which I'll throw out there, which can work for a lot of formulations, which is as follows. Really, Micha is irrelevant. Right? This is a very technical way of reading it, but I, right, again, it doesn't solve Gemara 1 and 3, but it solves the middle Gemara.
Yeah.
Right? And that goes like this. Micha is meaningless. Micha doesn't give you more or less rights in the property. Micha is not about ownership. It's about negotiating power. Which is, he comes to, yeah, it basically goes like this. He comes to his brothers and says, listen, I want the property right now. Right? At that point, what do they have to do? Give it to him. And if they give it to him and it produces more, then what happens with what it produces? He owns it. What happens if they're derelict in their responsibility to give him his property? Why might he get double? Not because he actually owned it, but because he has a claim against the brothers, which is, I said I wanted it last week because I wanted the produce. Why are you dragging your feet in giving me what's rightfully mine? Right, so it could be that really he doesn't own it until he gets it. The reason he gets double, starting from when he protests, is not because he owns it, but because the brothers have now harmed him by not giving him his rights, and therefore the brothers owe him, not because he owns it, but because meaning he had the right for them to give him what was his a week ago. If they didn't, the reason they have to pay him double is because You held down my property. There's an objectifiable loss that I suffered because you dragged your feet, right, in these negotiations, whatever, right? So it could be that we could just neutralize the second Gemara and say, Micha doesn't really give him more rights. It's just that it proves that the brothers aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is giving him his property, because if they give him his property, then he would have started owning anything that it produced. If they choose not to do that, they owe him what it produced, simply because they're dragging their feet, is what led to him not making double, right? So there is a very technical way of neutralizing too. It doesn't neutralize the problem of one and three of Gemara in Kofav Dalet and the second Gemara in Kofavav. Right? It just neutralizes this weird case of Micha, which is says maybe Micha is a very technical point. Right? I mean nothing fancy like the Ram, like it's right, the actualization of property and potential, right? It's simply, you're right, I still don't own it. Right? But that's your fault, not mine anymore. Right? That's maybe a very Balabhasic way of putting it, which is, yes, I don't own it yet because you didn't give it to me, but it's your fault, you pay the consequences of me not owning it.
That's a hammer
to the glass where I don't. Right? It's a very technical answer, but it does work to neutralize the middle Gemara. It just doesn't neutralize Kofav Dalet, Kofavav problems. Right? I mean, first, Kofav Dalet, where it's very clear that you get it later, and Kofavav second sugya, where in terms of waiving of rights, where it very clearly says you have those rights from the moment of death. Right? It just makes it that we don't really have to resolve the middle moment, which is what is this Micha thing. Okay? Yalla. Fine. There is the third position, which is the most lumdish of the three, which is the one that comes from the extreme mixos, is the following. I'm going to say it outside, okay? And that is the following. Until now, we've been assuming that the issue at hand is ownership of property. But there is another way of looking at this. And that is that the question, there's really two things that you have to deal with before. One is the actual right and ownership in the property. The second is his status as before.
That's being disputed?
No. One second. Until now, we've assumed that when we talk about waiving rights, what do we mean? Waiving rights to the property. But there's another way of looking at it, which is, he's not really waiving rights to the property. What is he doing? He's waiving his status as before, and mimela he doesn't get property. Right? Meaning, it's not a direct question. Is he giving up rights, or is he claiming rights to property? Rather, the question at hand is he giving up on his status and therefore returning himself to the estate as if he were a regular brother?
How do you
plug
that in?
One second. Right. Now, the Ksod is a very radical position that makes it clear that this Lungdish Svara should be on the table. And that is, the Ksod says, where did I put that here? The Ksod says, Achidish, the following. Look at the beginning of the Ksod. Nistapasi b'bechor sh'amar b'chayei aviv, ein rotze b'chelet b'chora, mi havei dvarav kayamin. The Ksod's question is, what would happen if a b'chor in the lifetime of the father would say, I don't want to inherit double? Do you say it works? Olomar be'ein b'dvarav klum kumo b'asher niyachol esalak atzma b'rusha aviv. Or do you say it's irrelevant, just like a regular yoresh? Now, what's his question? Well, what is it not? Right? If you think that a b'chor can give up on his rights as b'chor even before the father dies, then what is this sugya clearly not about?
Property
rights. Because everybody agrees that when the person giving, bequeathing the property is alive, do the heirs own the property yet?
No,
100% not, right? The person is alive. It is his. It is the father's. By the fact that the Ksot actually raises the possibility that you can waive rights. Now, he says in a regular Bechor, is a regular Bechor allowed to waive his rights?
No,
of course he can't waive his rights because he doesn't have any rights yet. So he says, is he Bechor like a regular Yoresh who can only start deciding whether he wants property or not after the father dies? Or can he waive his rights even while the father's alive? What does that mean? What is the Ksot thinking about Bechor? The Bechor is a status. And the fact that he gets double flows from his status. But were he to say, I don't want to be the Bechor, he might be able to do that because he's not directly giving up rights and property, which given he has no rights to until after death. But maybe he does have the ability to vacate his status as Bechor, the implications of which would be that he doesn't get double. Right? Is that clear? That's very lumdish, right?
Or if you go by the runs, or could you view it the other way? Also, that while the father is alive, you can say, "I want the, you know, I want the son of Pishon."
Say again.
If you go by the, if you use some combination of the run at that point, can you go the other way where he says, where he's Melchizedek that he wants Kishnayim already during the life of the father?
I don't know, right? Meaning that's the given, right? So, right, it's the given that he's going to have that. I mean, what would it mean that he wants it? I don't know.
Meaning to make it from being potential property so that...
I don't think you could do that, right? You can't have, right, you can't make an actual property when the father still owns it.
Like well, not, well, well, not, but meaning,
no, yeah, I don't think you can do that.
As soon as the father dies, it's already...
I don't know, right? You can't do that because it's not, right? Because the father's ownership still is present, I don't know if you could go that far. I think that would be pushing this a little bit too far. Look, do you guys actually read the Ksot inside? Did anyone actually get through the Ksot? Okay, so I don't feel so bad not reading all of it with you because it's not like you've struggled and now I'm not going to, right? So he goes through a lot of different things. One is whether the idea of siluk works only on derabbanans or even on deoraita, because there are other times when we talk about siluk. And that's specifically comparing it to the case of Yerushat Habaal. But in the end of the day, he does think that this is what we learn from Matana Kari Rachmana. Right? He thinks that Matana is this. That Matana means that your ability to inherit double is in your own hands. But again, he seems to, and therefore he thinks that he is noted to believe that even in the life of the father, the Bechor has the right to not be the Bechor. He notes that this is not totally clear, but he does, he is noted to this position, that you can do it. Now, even if you don't accept the Ksos's wild Kiddush, right, like I said, what the Ksos does leave you with the possibility is that what's going on, right, is not a waiving directly of property, but a waiving of status. Right? Now, if that's the case, we could use this to work on our sugyas. Why? Because on Kuf Chav Vav, the third sugya, right, when it says, at what point are you able to waive rights, right, but the Ksot says, at the end of the day, right, he thinks that you can waive rights even during your life, which means that he thinks it's a different mechanism. So it could be that the sugya there is asking, at what point does the status of Bechor become relevant? And the answer is, that's relevant, maybe even in your lifetime, and definitely true after. Right? I mean, even if you reject the Tzos, you could say that what the Tzos says about life is what the Sugyan Kochavav is saying about death, is that the status of Bechor is inherited as soon as the father dies. And in terms of being Mevater Nechasim, right, all you need is that he now has the status in his hands, and the question is, at what point can he walk away from the status? And if you say, Matana Kari Rahmana, as soon as the father dies, he can walk away from the property, you could just say that's because, not because he has ownership in the field. He's not directly going for ownership in the field. What's he doing? He's walking away from being the Bahar. Similarly, the sugya previously in Kofa Vav, right, where he says, if he's Moche, he inherits, that's either because he has now asserted his status as Bahar, right, in the Ron life, or you say, no, just take the technical answer we said before, which is, you're right, at Moche he doesn't yet actualize his status as Bechor, it's just that now he has negotiating power, because he said, you should have given it to me, right, however you want to do it. But what about the Sugyan Kochav Dalid? Kochav Dalid isn't about waiving his rights, it's at what point does he not have just have the status of Bechor and the rights to come with it, but at what point does he have ownership in the field such that he inherits double? And the answer is, right, he doesn't have ownership from death, he only has the status of Bechor, everything that comes with it is death. But in order to get double, he needs rights in a specific property. Right, so it could be that the status of Bechor takes effect at death, or maybe according to Tzos, even in life, and therefore vacating your rights through that mechanism can happen earlier. But double inheritance requires not just the status of Bechor, but a hold in the property. And that only happens when it's actually given to you. And again, how do you deal with the middle case of Moche? So either you go somewhere like the Ron, right, which is his status of Bechor gives him rights and potential. All he needs to do is to declare that he wants to actualize it. Right? Or you come up with a technicality, which is he doesn't really own it until it's divided, but because the brothers shouldn't be dragging their feet, he has enhanced negotiation rights in terms of taking double from the moment he is Mocha. Okay? So those are, let's say, 2, 3, or 2.5 models to deal with the stiras between Kochav Dalet and Kochav Vav. Let me lead you into tomorrow, because again, I'm doing this mostly for Rami, because I don't know how much we'll get into the full sugya, but this is sort of a microcosm. All of these shitot actually assume that what the Bechor has is weird. Right? The Rama, at death, he only has rights. The Ran, he has ownership and potential. Maybe based on the Ksos, he has the status of Bechor. But what's the simplest understanding of the sugya there? Is Matana Kariyachmana? He actually owns it, right? So the question is, if it's Matana Kariyachmana, then why in Kochav Dalet does it sound like he owns it, and until Kochav Vav, it sounds like he doesn't own it? And in that context, the Rashbam and Tosfos argue about the following question. Remember, the Gemara says he gives up on his rights.
Yeah.
Good. There are three possibilities of what that means. Either he gives up on his Bechor side of it, but not his Pashut side of it, meaning his half as a Bechor, but not his half as a child. The opposite, which is, he gives up on his right as a regular Yorish, but not his right to the Bechor.
So he gets like, what?
Or he gives up on both. Right? That's the machloket that Rashbam and Tosfos get into, which is, when you said to give up on rights, which half did you mean? And this will obviously give us more room to deal with the
Sira. You mean literally any sense at all.
Well, guess what? That's the machloket Rashbam and Tosfos, which is, which half is he get? When we say he gives up on his rights, which half did he give up on? His Bechor rights or his rights as a regular son? And not his Bechor. It's the machloket. Need I repeat myself? It is the machloket Rashbam and Tosfos, and because Rami cares so much about the corporate personhood, you will discover that this question, as Rav Elchanan Wasserman notes, may come down to it. So tomorrow, what I'm going to do is just say, read Rashbam and Tosfos, and if you want, I will give you Rav Elchanan, If you don't want Rav Elchanan, then I will explain to Rav Elchanan. But if you would like to look at Rav Elchanan, what he does with his Mahloket Rashbam Tosfot, then look at it. Okay? The last thing I'll just note, I gave you just one interesting nafkam in here, which is here on the Halacha Ketano. Where the Halacha Ketano says that later on in the Gemara has like curses for people who try to make it that their sons don't inherit. He was asked, is that true if I treat my Bechor as a regular son? And he actually says, no. The curse of the Gemara is only if you don't let inherit heirs inherit, but not treating a Bechor like a Bechor doesn't violate that. Now, and why? Because Matana Kariyakamana. Now, he might be right about that, but I'll be honest, that short tshuva creates more problems than it solves, because, as we saw last week, it's Dafka not giving the Bechor his rights that has a Isur D'oraisa attached to it, not the regular one. So I don't know what he wants from my life there exactly, but he does really, really think Matana Kari Rahmana gives it a unique status, but it seems to mess with other Isur D'oraisa, so I really don't know what to do with it. I'll just throw that out there. But tomorrow, like I said, what I want you to do is I want you to focus on the question of, in the final sugya of the Bechor being mevater and his nechassim, is he being mevater on the chelak habachor, or is he being mevater on the chelak haposhut, right? Machloket Rashbam Tosfot. And I want you to think about what that tells you about the nature of Yerusha. Okay, do that tomorrow. What's today, Tuesday?
Yeah.
So then hopefully Thursday we'll start with the sugya in Sota of leaving Israel in times of war. And that should take us a few days, because it's a fun sugya. So that'll take us... What? Okay.